Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Check it, Mighty Tower of Power, bringing us back from the break. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV. Of course, some of you live on Twitch.tv, Sports Byline USA channel, and of course, WBC TV as well, the Veeve Network. Straight up, my name is Pedro Fernandez. You know that, or you wouldn't be here, I don't think. Bottom line is, we're talking boxing, MMA. Before I go to the East Coast and bring in Boxing's PhD, I got to say this. I was impressed with Virgil Ortiz last week. I mean, 23 years old, young kid, 17-0, 17 knockouts coming in, facing a decent fighter, an undefeated fighter, and I take it back, a once-beaten fighter, and Egidius Cavalusis. But Cavalusis, he came so – Cavalusis is going to be famous for two things, dropping Terrence Crawford and not getting credit for it, and dropping Virgil Ortiz and not getting credit for it, because I thought he got knockdowns in both fights, but he didn't jump on it. The bottom line is, when you're the opponent in a fight, when you're the opponent – everything is stacked against you. The boxing establishment is against you. The promoters against you. The matchmakers figuring out this match that you're going to lose so his guy can win. The other guy's manager. Everybody, the fans, everybody's picking against you, okay? So you get one opportunity. This lone opportunity, you hurt your guy. Whoa, this is it. This is my chance to hit the lottery. And what do? You don't go for it. I don't get it. You throw 1,000% into everything you've got in that second round if you're Cavalusis, and you see what happens. The bottom line is, you're not going to win this guy down, beat this guy down the stretch, Virgil Ortiz, and that's what happened. Ortiz ended up stopping him in the eighth round. More props to Cavalusis, but the bottom line is, Virgil Ortiz looks like a threat for the future at 147 pounds, no doubt about that. Now, we take it to the East Coast, bringing the Bronx Bomber. I'm talking about Mr. Socrates Palmer, back from the Dominican Republic. And so were you over there? Are you a land baron in the Dominican Republic now? Is that what I'm trying? Is that what I'm hearing?
I wish. Maybe in the future. No, I was a complete tourist over there. Had a great time. Had not been there in about 12 years. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed Santo Domingo. I enjoyed it. I mean, the only place I didn't enjoy when I went in the world was Dubai. Outside of that, every place I went was great, and without a doubt, the Dominican was absolutely beautiful, and the women are absolutely stunning, to say no. Speaking of stunning, we'll get to Virgil Ortiz. Take that back. We'll get to Virgil Ortiz right now. Virgil Ortiz looked fantastic last week for the fact that he got up off the deck and he was able to how can I put it, fight through some controversy there, some adversity. I mean, you know, he got knocked down. I thought he got knocked down. He got buzzed, no doubt about that. So what kind of report card does the Boxing's PhD give him?
I thought he looked really good. You know, a lot of young fighters, you don't really know what you have in front of them. I mean, what we're looking at until they do face some adversity. I mean, like you were saying earlier, I mean, he was definitely the house fighter. And Mean Machine had everything stacked against them. And until you don't know how good they are until they get hit back, you know. And I was really impressed by Virgil Ortiz. Yes, I thought that should have been counted as a knockdown. But then again, the referee was Lawrence Cole, I believe.
Larry, don't call him. Let me tell you what. If you want to get into a fight with that dude, call him Larry. Oh, I'm telling you, man. Lawrence spells his name L-A-U-R-E-N-C-E, not L-A-W. I mean, if you spell his name wrong or you call him Larry, I'm telling you, you call him Larry, he'll fire you up.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think it's going to be the first criticism, you know, of Lawrence Cole as a referee. But, you know, I thought he missed one, but hey, we're all human. But needless to say, the young man dusted himself off. He took about a round to get his bearings, and he started to put it on a very tough game guy. And I'm going to just call him the Mean Machine because I can't pronounce his name.
Cavalusis. Listen, man.
He's a bad boy. He's a tough guy.
Yeah.
He's a tough welterweight. He would give anybody, a good night's work, you know, but he's just one of those guys that falls short in the big moment. I was there live when he fought Crawford. He should have gotten credit for that knockdown, and he hurt Crawford. But, you know, the special guys know when to turn it up, and I think we saw that in Ortiz.
Yeah, you know, I'll just put it to you like this. I've been the opponent. I mean, I've been the opponent. I've seen newspaper articles where they're talking about this other guy in the whole nine yards. I'm saying to myself, grinding my teeth in the dressing room. Okay, so I've been the opponent. When you're the opponent, you got to go out there and make all the statements. You've got to make all the statements. And when you get a guy on the ropes, you got to, like, as I thought Ortiz was on the ropes per se. I thought you needed to take him out. Bottom line is Ortiz was lucky. Let's hear Ortiz post fight.
Well, Virgil, congratulations. In 2021, we've seen a lot of top young fighters go through adversity and shine in it. We saw Ryan Garcia do it. We saw Devin Haney do it. Now it feels like we saw you do it in this fight. What did you think of your performance?
You know, I think I did all right. I got the win. I could have looked a little prettier doing it, but hey, well, I'm happy with my performance, and we're only going to get better from here.
I mentioned that adversity. Second round, it looked like you got into more trouble than we've seen you get in at any point in your career. It even looked like there might have been a knockdown that wasn't scored. You weren't knocked down.
Nope, not at all. You know, he caught me with a good shot, but I took it well, and I've recovered from it, and here I am.
When he started to come forward, and here we see the sequence that we're talking about, when he started to come forward and was landing shots, what was going through your mind?
It's, you know, it's boxing. That happens in sparring all the time. Not necessarily me getting hit a lot, but people coming at me like that, barraging, and, you know, I'm used to it. Yeah.
When you were going back to your corner after that second round, how were you feeling going into it?
Hey, I mean, honestly, I don't think I was as hurt as you think I was. You know, I mean, he got me with a good shot, you know. But, you know, this is boxing. Everyone's going to get hit at one point. And I felt good. Right now, I'm not even tired.
You responded incredibly well, whether you were knocked down or not. You responded well in that third round, landing that left hand. Looked like a left jab that put Kavalauskas down for the first time. What did you see there?
Well, I think it was more of a flash knockdown, if I'm being honest, because I didn't see him really stumble a lot. But, I mean, yeah, you know, well, his knee kind of buckled there. It was a good shot. It was just a perfectly placed shot.
In the fourth round and then beyond, you just start to take over. You were disciplined throughout this fight. You fought behind the jab throughout the course of this fight. Was that the game plan against the guy that you said coming in was really tough?
I mean, honestly, yeah, that's what we worked on. We worked on trying to box and all that stuff, the whole training camp, and we put it to good use.
Take me through the finish of this fight, because you've said to us, you can tell when a guy's hurt. You can read their body language. In that last round, what were you seeing?
I'm not going to lie. I really couldn't tell he was hurt, except when I had to chase him down pretty much. But, no, he does a really good job of masking it.
What adjustments did you make, especially in this last round?
You know what? I just, at first, I was trying to box him, and then the body shots, my dad told me from the beginning, before the fight, the body shots were going to be the key to victory, and I slowed him down, and that's all she wrote.
At what point could you see those body shots start to take something out of him?
In that second round, that's when I caught him with the first body shot. If you pay attention, that's exactly what happened.
I'm not sure if it was in your mind at all, but it took Terrence Crawford 9 rounds to finish Kavalauskas. You did it in 8. Does that matter to you?
Was it 8 rounds?
Just at the end of the 8th round.
It felt like it was 4. I mean, that doesn't really mean anything to me, because me and Crawford are different fighters, different skill sets. You know, that doesn't really mean anything to me.
Well, do you walk away from this fight believing you're ready for Terrence Crawford?
Yes, sir.
What has to happen for that fight to happen soon?
I don't even know what I have to do anymore.
Do you feel like you've earned that opportunity?
Yes.
What's your message now to Terrence Crawford?
I'm here whenever. I'm ready to fight whenever. I'm here to fight anybody. I don't care if it's Crawford, Spence, Pacquiao, you name it. I'll fight anyone.
Congratulations, Virgil. Another great performance.
Thank you.
Guys.
Bring it on. The kid from Texas wants to take on anybody, and the bottom line is Terrence Crawford, I think, is running back to Omaha, Nebraska. The bottom line is Terrence is talking about a super fight. He told me a few years ago, I want to be a great fighter. We're on a cruise. We're in Cuba or Dominican Republic, somewhere over there in the Caribbean, and we're on a boat, and I'm saying, you know, we're talking about great fighters, and he goes, I really want to be a great fighter. I want to go to, you know, Hagler, Duran, Leonard, Hearns, those type of guys. I don't want to be a Benitez. That's what he said. I don't want to be a Benitez. Whoa. I want to be one of those. Well, bottom line is, you know, you got to fight people. You got to fight great fighters in order to become a great fighter. I don't think that Terrence Crawford's done that thus far. I think when hearing him being called out by Virgil Ortiz, now he can't get a dub. We're bringing Boxing's PhD once again. Talk about Socrates Palmer. He can't get a fight anywhere. Terrence Crawford, he's complaining about not getting a fight. Here's a fight presented straight to him.
Well, before I attack that, for him to say, I don't want to be a Benitez, first of all, when Benitez was 17 years old, he was whipping up on grown men.
No, I know. Terrence Crawford 13 years old.
Fighting.
13
years old. Yeah, I mean, he's a world champion. If he was an American, they would have made a movie about him. You know, although he is an American, but meaning you know, of a different complexion or whatnot. But Benitez was winning world titles when Terence Crawford was still, at that age, fighting for trophies.
Not even fighting yet.
Yeah, I mean, so that's kind of disrespectful.
I think what he meant was the Benitez of nowadays. You know, I mean, Wilfred's that's what I think he was letting. In other words, he wanted to end up like Floyd, not Benitez. I think that's what he basically that's where he was coming from as far as that was concerned. I don't think that was a big knock on Wilfred in particular. But the bottom line is, you know, Wilfred took a lot of heat, took a lot of shots. And he was getting beat up by Edwin. He was sparring with Edwin Virouet and those guys from Esteban de Jesus, those guys from Puerto Rico. Bad dudes, man. He was 13 years old and holding his own with these guys. But his brain was getting beat around. And when your brain gets beat around at 12 or 13, it's not in its formulated years. I don't think it's formulated yet. And I think that's what's brought on basically he's in bad shape.
He is. It's very sad. Props to a mutual buddy of ours, John Scully. He does some charity work on his behalf. He's done some benefits for him. I think his sister is his caretaker. Very sad. But to get back to Terence Crawford, who I have the utmost respect for, I think he's in the discussion of top two or three best fighters in the world. Every single avenue is closing for him. He's got a fight that, like you said, is right in front of him against Ortiz. He's a Mexican fighter. So right away, it's going to spike the pay-per-view. You got to take that fight. I mean, maybe Ortiz is taking on a little bit more he can chew early, kind of like Fernando Vargas, but that's on him. You know, if I'm Terence Crawford, I say, where do I sign? I mean, that's, to me, it's the biggest fight that can be made other than just waiting for Spence and who knows if he'll ever fight again or Manny Pacquiao.
Well, Spence, according to Mauricio Sulaiman, Spence's retina was not torn, it was like bruised. So there was very slight damage to the eye, very minimal surgery, this and that. So they expect him back sooner rather than later. Bottom line is, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it, your inside look into the world of boxing and mixed martial arts. Of course, this is also WBC Boxing TV, coming to you on Veev TV, as well as the Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. My name is Pedro Fernandez. We'll be back with more of Boxing's PhD, Socrates Palmer, after the break.
You fooled me once again. Clever girl, seems I can't remember when. There was a time I didn't have you on my mind, but your subtle lie made me think the winning card was mine. Now I start to understand I must be just part of your plan.
Now more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez, brought to you by the WBC. The World Boxing Council, right here on Sports Byline.
The guitar of the mighty Jeff Tamalier, Pleasant Hill, California, Pittsburgh, over that way. Jeff can rock, man. He's like the Hendrix of funk, no doubt about that. He's been with Starship, Tower of Power, Average White Band. He's been around the old school block, no doubt about that. My buddy Jeff Tamalier. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV, of course, coming to you live on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. I can go through 1,000 different internet platforms we're on right now, but the bottom line is I got to spend some time with Boxing's PhD, Mr. Socrates Palmer Jr. Of course, we are hours away from Manny Pacquiao and Yordi Ugas. Yordi Ugas is a Cuban national. Tell me what is impressive about Yordi Ugas, Socrates?
What is impressive? He's a guy that I think he gives an honest effort every time, and that's all you can really ask for from a pro fighter. A guy that comes out, he's always in shape. Props to his team for, you know, basically getting him a fight 2 weeks notice. So, you know, the guy's in the gym. He's a pretty solid, does nothing spectacular, but he comes from that historic Cuban boxing tradition, long amateur career. But he's kind of tailor-made, you know, for Manny Pacquiao. He's a guy that's not necessarily fast. He's not a big puncher. Doesn't really have the quickest feet. And there's a rumor that he's coming in damaged with a bum wing. He's got a torn bicep, supposedly, that he's denied.
Got to make that money. This is professional boxing. I hate to say it to you like that, but you know, everybody goes into a fight with some aches or pains. I mean, I used to have them. So somehow when you get in the dressing room, all those little aches and pains, they just disappear. I mean, you can't believe you have all these little bitches and bitching you've done for like 6 or 8 weeks during training camp about this muscle or that muscle, isn't it? You go into the dressing room and it's all over.
Yeah. I mean, that adrenaline hits your body and walking into that aisle, you know, and seeing all those people. And it's like, if you have to transform, you know, unless you're a robot, and that's probably going to happen.
Okay.
Ugas, I just don't see him winning. I don't think he's got enough to beat Manny Pacquiao, despite having a little bit of an age advantage. I mean, although he's not a spring chicken himself, he's 35 in quotation marks. You know, he's a Cuban national, so he might be closer to 37, 38.
Or 50.
He may be older than Manny Pacquiao.
I mean, listen, I looked at a picture of that dude. You know, I could say he's definitely with the Just for Men Club. There's no doubt about that. But let's talk about Jordi Ugas for a second. I mean, I'm looking at his career here and this and that. You know, there was a point in 2001, June 23rd, 2001, to be exact, when Ledlo Ledwaba, I think he was the IBF 122-pound champion at the time, he needed an opponent for this June 23rd card on HBO at the MGM Grand. So 2 weeks before, they reached out and through Sydney Hall, in San Mateo, California, the attorney that I work with, through Sydney Hall and a couple other guys, Marianne Muhammad or whoever it was. Anyway, bottom line is they got Manny Pacquiao at the last minute to come in here, and he knocked out Ledwaba, and that was the beginning of a legend, without a doubt. So what I'm trying to tell you is, isn't Ugas in the same position Manny was in 2001?
Yes, but really not. Yes, but really not. I mean, because we've seen Ugas before. I mean, his best performance is a fight that, you know, I've heard a few people say they should have got the win against Sean Porter.
Yeah.
And Porter that night really was, you could tell it wasn't him. And that's on him. You know what I mean? I'm not going to discredit Ugas' performance. But that's his best night as a pro. You know, a split decision loss against Sean Porter.
But one judge had a 117-111, and the one judge had a 116-112, Steve Morrow, the former Gilroy cop that I broke into this business basically about 25, 30 years ago. I think he's cross-eyed.
Yeah, I mean, the scores were very, you know, dubious. I mean, disgraceful. You know, it was a coin flip of a fight. A fight that a guy that's not used to losing probably wins. You know, Ugas already has tasted defeat. Mm-hmm. And I think that's that intangible, you know, it's like, you know, that hunger to be great. You know, there's certain guys that are just good bridesmaids, despite the fact that he's got this bogus title that the WBA strapped on him. You know, he's kind of like that bridesmaid.
You know, because we're sponsored by the WBC, I really don't like going downtown on the WBA too much. But the bottom line is, they're about to take some heat. I saw some stuff from the Association of Boxing Commission. Are you whistling because of the heat?
That's right.
Exactly.
Yes. They've had some bad press the last couple of weeks because of a judge, you know, about 2 weeks ago.
But it's not only a judge with them. It's the char thing. I mean, you know, they got 19 heavyweight champions. Evidently, they came up with a rule this week. They're going to eliminate their interim champions because of the fact that the ABC is about to shut them down. So if the ABC says you can't promote or you can't do title fights here in the United States, they're done.
Yeah, I mean, that's whoever came up with that brilliant idea of these super champions is just, they shouldn't be allowed boxing. I mean, and it's a shame because WBA for decades, I mean, some of the great fighters of all time held WBA titles. Roberto Duran was the WBA champion. I remember when he beat Davey Moore. So, I mean, it's, you know, not a good thing. Hopefully they get some common sense slapped into them.
The Davey Moore-Roberto Duran fight, I fly to L.A. to watch this fight on closed-circuit television. That's how bad I want to see this, and they're not showing it anywhere in Northern California. There weren't satellite dishes, none of that stuff going on. So I went out in the Main Street Theater, Hector and I, in Los Angeles, California, and it was just, we were like blown away by that, man. We were just like, when he hit him with that right hand in the second round, when they both threw right hands and Duran's right hand got there first, the fight was over.
Yes, that fight is very special to me because I remember my dad took me to my godparents' house to watch that fight. And I might have been about 6 years old, and I was hooked. That is what got me hooked on boxing.
Why is it everybody can remember where their father, their uncle, their grandfather took them when it comes to a boxing match? You don't hear that kind of crap about people watching baseball games on TV, but boxing matches are different.
I love all sports, you know, and I played them as a kid and a little bit as an adult, but nothing is like a fight. Nothing, a big fight night. It's just, there's nothing like it. It's unless you have to just take somebody there for them to experience it for themselves. It's,
okay. Andy's got a question for you on the text. He says, who wins between Crawford and Virgil Ortiz right now?
If they fight right this second, I would have to lean to Terrence Crawford, but I wouldn't be shocked if Ortiz just, you know, he's the bigger welterweight. He's a natural welterweight. Yeah. And, you know, you might be looking at somebody special.
Did you see him in that second round when he came back with that body shot and he just froze that Glava, what's his name? Let me look at this again. Oh, God. If I don't remember his name, I can't say
Cavaluskas.
It. Lavaluskas. Anyway, bottom line is when he stopped him with that body shot in the second round, he came back, he stopped. That turned the fight back the other way.
He reminded me of Miguel Cotto, you know, a little bit.
Well, no, I think we lost. Did we lose Socrates?
Yes. I'm here.
Try that one more time.
I said he reminded me of Miguel Cotto with that body work. And he just, like I said, he took it to another level. And we may have witnessed a special fighter last week.
Always a privilege to spend some time with Boxing's PhD, Socrates Palmer. Say hello to the family. Good to have you back in the U.S. I'm surprised they let you back in, but that's a story for another day. We'll talk soon.
Love you, brother. Thank you. Great to be back.
The great Socrates Palmer, Boxing's PhD, live on Ring Talk Live Worldwide, and of course, WBC TV on Vive TV.